RPG Lessons Learned. When the game is over, when your players are gone, that's when lessons are learned. We are at RPGLL Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, rpglpodcast@gmail.com, and check us out online at rpglessonslearned.com. Hi, welcome to RPG Lessons Learned, the show where you can learn from our mistakes. I'm here today again in beautiful RFC Studios with my good friend Brian.
Hey Dusty, how's it going?
Brian, I'm doing well. And we're about to listen to the third episode of our Vampire the Masquerade campaign.
Yeah, I'm excited about it, actually. I really enjoyed the last session, I think because I was exposed to some ideas that I hadn't thought about, again, not playing this system. So remind us, though, like what happened in sessions one and two real quick.
Sure. So far, session one, episode one, session zero, Nathan and Chris introduced their characters. And then in episode two, they actually met Jack and learned a little bit more about the broader world of Vampire the Masquerade, including some of the clans and some of the rules. And then here in episode three, we'll actually get to some combat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so content warning for combat, I suppose. Death and killing. All the usual murder hobo RPG fun stuff.
I can't wait.
Let's give it a listen.
Well, I can think of a way for you to convince the prince that you're a neonate.
Okay.
But it's going to involve getting into a pretty serious fight.
So when we say fight, like, are we talking like vampire power or kindred power fight? Or are we talking about like fisticuffs?
We're talking about the two of you generic vampires taking on a full-blooded Bruja.
I don't like the way that you say generic. It makes me feel inferior.
It's that or death, right? That's kind of what we're looking at here.
Let's go non-death. Let's do that.
Okay.
Let's do that.
There's another tradition of destruction that says that you can't kill another vampire. It's off limits. Doesn't mean it doesn't happen, but it's off limits. Unless a blood hunt is called. A blood hunt is what's going to come down on your ears if anyone figures out what you are. And a blood hunt has been called on a Bruja fledgling. Seems he's gone and tried to stand himself up a little kingdom of ghouls outside the Camarilla's rules. The Bruja Primogen's not happy about it. If you find him first and you deliver his head, that should be enough to convince the prince that you're full-on neonates and not fledglings.
Well, I guess we're going to have ourselves a brouhaha.
It just so happens I might know where to find him. You'll find Peter at the Robert Smith Municipal Park. He likes to gather his followers there.
Was there more?
There is. I'm working on it.
Okay, so Robert Smith Municipal Park?
He gathers his followers, and they talk a little treason. They whip themselves up into a frenzy about the Camarilla. And tonight, he's going to try to call them together to figure out how to get himself out of Charlotte. If you get there, and soon, you'll catch him. Do you have any more questions for Jack?
Yeah, can you just write down on directions? I don't know how to get there. I just need help.
Someone outside will write directions for you.
Okay, thanks.
Anything silver, stakes, blunt trauma? I
think I was actually wrong about the silver earlier. Okay. Again, my first ever game of Vampire, your first game of Vampire, we're winging it. Mm. What you want to do, fledgling, stake him, cut his head off. That'll kill anybody.
I would hope so.
Okay. All right. If that's what we got to do.
Don't worry. He's a fledgling, too.
Do you guys have any weapons or anything that we could use? Because, I mean, right now I got, like, some steak knives at home, but I don't think those are the types of steaks you
need. Well, sure, but they're not free.
Okay. Do you take checks?
Roll a random D6.
Six.
You have $600 on you.
Okay.
Cash.
I hand him up to $450, depending on what he tells me that it costs.
He takes the $450.
Shit. No, so how much are these stakes that you need?
What you got? What weapons do you have?
He pulls out a 357 Magnum.
Done.
And sets it on the pool table. And he says, $450.
Why did you tell... That's what's going
actually,
to happen.
He would, in all honesty, he would say $500.
Yeah. I will get. I have $450 cash.
Well.
Or I can do a $500 check.
I'll take the $450.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Go.
All right. You are now armed.
Yep.
With a 357 Magnum.
Right.
And he gives you a box of ammunition. The box of ammunition has 20 rounds in it.
He wants to make sure that we succeed, right? Just talking out of character. He wants to make sure that we succeed because... Right?
Make me a social roll.
Oh, man, that's the one I don't have.
One.
But success.
Okay. What, each of you get one success? Mm-hmm. With one success, he's giving you an honest shot, but he's not giving you a sure thing.
Right.
He's not helping you. He's not sending any of his boys with you.
He's not giving us an Uzi.
He's not giving you an Uzi.
Yeah.
But he is helping you.
Fair.
But if you fail... He's lost nothing. You've reimbursed him for the gun and the bullets.
So anything that we should know about the Bruja that you think would help us set ourselves up for success that I didn't ask before I started walking out of the bar?
The Bruja are a clan, and it should please you to know they're the toughest fighters in the whole Camarilla.
Are they bulletproof?
They are not.
Okay, good. We'll figure it out.
I'll go ahead and warn you. You're going to have a hard time getting the drop on a Bruja. Hmm. Plan carefully.
Are they smart?
That's a loaded question, but no.
What are ghouls?
Ghouls are people who drank in kindred blood, but are not dead. He controls them. They're addicted to his blood. They take their orders from him. They're as mortal as you were 3 weeks ago. Don't worry. I'm sure you'll do fine.
All right.
Hey, the worst that can happen is that you die a little bit sooner.
So about this death thing, like, if we're immortal, are we really going to, like, die only if we just don't, you know?
You've already died. We call what's waiting for you next the final death.
Death 2.
That's crucial. Death 2.
There's no coming back from that.
I'm going to leave now, and I'm going to ask you, have you ever shot a gun before?
Should I just roll a die?
You tell me. It's your character. Why don't you tell me about, each of you, a brief story about how you got your highest trait, and you can weave into that whether or not you can fire a gun. I will tell you, mechanically, there's no skill for it. Mm-hmm. So it's all flavor.
Mm. Boy, you're making it really hard not to metagame this.
Do it.
Do I?
Do it for the
best. Extremely.
So in the actual vampire system... With all the skills, there is a skill for it. Mm. In this D6 quick start system, there's not. There's just a way to resolve ranged attacks, and the only effect using firearms have is that bullets have +1 damage over, like, javelins or arrows or throwing knives. In full-on vampire, that would be a different answer.
Firearm is +3.
Is it +3? Yeah. This is why I write things down.
Ed's, well, I think it's mental, so I think more of intellectual... Occasionally went out to range, just relieve stress. Don't ask me more, because that's all I can think of right now.
So what's going to range? Does Edward own a firearm that he might go retrieve? Or did Edward rent one at the range when he needed it? In other words, was Edward the kind of guy that would take on gun ownership and cleaning it and storing it and locking it and having ammunition?
Oiling it.
Would he take that on as part of his hobby, or would he simply go to the range and rent a gun there?
Ed saw RoboCop and it really put the fear of God into him. So he did go purchase a gun and did shoot it occasionally. Maybe not the best upkeep, but, you know, it's a 38 special. You don't need... It's a piece of metal.
I gotcha. Got it.
Snub nose. Yeah.
So would you go get your gun as well?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay. So you have your weapon.
I've only done skeet shooting.
I gave him the 38.
Yeah, thank you.
You switch guns.
Exactly, yep.
You take this.
I've only done skeet shooting, and that was only on like a retreat for my corporate, for my boss, that I had to set up. So because I set it up, he allowed me to attend.
So that's interesting.
Sharpie on this end towards enemy, not
and
the barrel.
Real quick, Zep, your highest trait is psychic, and psychic. Why is that?
So when I think psychic, I think more of the ability to control his thoughts, and mentally he can't, right? He just lets them go wild, but he at least he's able to control them by keeping them on a steady path to the point where they do manifest themselves, and you know, he gets hives occasionally, or he gets like a little bit of a bout of panic, stuff like that. So I'm picturing the psychic as the abilities manifesting from that.
All right, cool. So you arrive at the park. The park is pretty large. How might you search the park for an undead gathering of, you know, a revolutionary renegade kindred and his followers?
So we're at the
pavilion. As tables, as an overhang, a little bit of little grills that no one ever uses.
Okay.
So do we want to...
We're still mostly human.
Do we want to do the bait? Send one of us out as bait and then the other one ambush them?
Go right ahead.
Or do we want to just like sneak up on them together and go young guns blazing at them?
Let's try to sneak up.
The sneak up? Okay.
They're good fighters. Now, if you want to go ahead.
No, I don't know about an ambush simply because if we go shooting and we're not on the same side, there's a very real chance that I may shoot you.
All right. So, sneak. For you to sneak, you'll see that stealth is in the back of the character sheet. I'm just going to refer you to that as reference occasionally so that you see that I am following the rules. You need to roll physical against the target's mental.
Oh.
Whenever you do an opposed roll, the difficulty is almost always 4. Very rarely will it be different.
Okay.
So usually, if we're rolling opposed, it's a 4. So is one of you sneaking or is both of you sneaking?
I'd say we're both sneaking.
Yeah.
It's a 2-roll versus 1 roll where you're more likely to fail, I guess. This system is 1997, so it's before the notion of group checks and all that from 5th edition. D&D, I should say, 5th edition.
Our physical versus their mental.
Yep, versus the fledgling's mental.
Oh, okay.
Get your physical dice pool together, and let's roll.
Oh boy.
I have 1 success. You each need to beat that.
We have 2 successes.
2 each.
All right, you beat it. On a tie, by the way, the target is suspicious, and subsequent rolls are DC3 for the target. With your success, you can get easily within firearm range that you can both hit your target. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're going to do?
How many fledglings are we seeing? Is there just the 3?
It's the 1 fledgling the 3 ghouls.
1 fledgling, 3 ghouls. The fledgling is the guy we're going after, right? So, I mean,
I imagine if you kill the leader, you're going to have to
cut. I was about to say, let's just both shoot at the fledgling, so that way we make sure that we hit them, because there's no guarantee that we will. And then we'll be able to take on the ghouls, because, let's face it,
vampires.
We're kindred, right? And they're just ghouls.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
All right. So why don't you both go ahead and shoot. Ranged combat.
Here we go.
You are at medium range, which makes it a DC4. So roll physicality. With a difficulty of 4.
Hopefully one of us is able to hit. Right? Let's go. 2 success.
2 successes?
DC4, right? For medium?
Correct.
2 successes.
Nice. Okay. So with your 2 successes each, you can't dodge, can't run.
Is damage, do we roll that or do we...
Damage, success on a strike roll... Plus 1, firearm makes it plus 3. So firearm's plus additional 2. So 2 successes, 2 successes.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, 5 damage, 5 damage. I am going to have him roll to soak that 10 damage.
How did we get to 5?
2 successes, plus 3. All right, I'm going to roll his physicality to soak. DC 5. Yes. So it's non-aggravated damage, so he is going to soak and make that half damage. But he does take 5 damage.
So that puts him in a serious, right?
Well, yes, that puts him in a serious.
Hooray.
He goes crazy. The dude goes into an absolute rage when he takes those shots. He points at the two of you because he very obviously saw the sparks and the smoke from your guns at night. And he screams to his followers, "The Camarilla! Kill them!" And he himself, he's so strong that... Almost inhuman, he comes loping at you to attack.
Almost inhuman?
Sure, inhuman.
I was gonna say
it's a human body. It's a human body, but he has such strength that it looks totally alien as he just comes loping at you. Mm. By entering that rage, I'm just going to go ahead and let you guys know he can ignore the Sirius, so you're going to see me roll all of his dice. That's a thing that Bruja can do, is they can go into it. They can spend the blood to go into rage to ignore pain while attacking enemies in melee. Let's go ahead and resolve initiative.
So wait, all of those dice? He's just rolling for normal?
He's rolling as normal.
Oh, okay.
None of you have Hunter's Instinct. No one has Celerity. Highest physical. His physical is 4.
It's 3.
What's your physical?
3.
All right. He is going to attack first. Mm-hmm. The ghoul's physical is 3. So I'm going to go ahead and say that they will attack after you. Mm-hmm. He is going to come running up on the 357. He gets +1.
I'm the 357.
No, you switched.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I'm this one. That's 38.
Roll your physical.
Okay.
What? Oh, for all that, he has 2 successes.
I also have two successes.
No, but he was attacking him.
Yeah.
Oh.
Hang on to that roll. Hang on to those 2 successes. Yeah. Hang on to that. So, melee combat, strike, physicality versus physicality. We tie, so I'm going to say he inflicts damage.
Okay.
Damage is physicality, which for him is 4. So it's 4 damage to you. This is not aggravated damage because he does not have protean claws. So go ahead and roll the soak. So make a physicality roll DC 5.
Mm. 3.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, you soak. So it's only half damage. 2. You go ahead, and then you, and then the ghouls will attack you.
So that puts me in medium. So I'll two damage. That puts me in the medium damage, which means I can throw anyone that's died.
Yes. You can also shoot him at close range.
What does that do?
It is a ranged. It's the same as what we just did. It's just DC 3 instead.
Oh, I cast a gun. I don't worry about it.
You go ahead. Yeah. You can attack one of the ghouls.
Yeah. Or him.
If you run, sure, you can. If you, I imagine you guys were a bit separated to have a crossfire.
Yeah.
If you head over, sure, you can make it in a turn.
I still want to hit him.
Sure.
Like my whole thing is hitting that guy.
All right, are you shooting or are you physically attacking?
Shooting.
Okay.
Hitting with a bullet.
If you don't make at least 1 success, I'm going to have you make a second roll to see if you hit your brother.
Stepbrother.
That's Edward, okay. Edward wants to be sure that everyone knows.
Yep.
Stepbrother.
All right. So I'm going to run up to him and try to shoot close.
Okay.
Is that okay? Instead of just standing
there. In that case, it won't make you roll if you miss.
Okay. DC 3, 2 success.
All right, yeah, you hit him. So how much damage is that?
2 success plus 3 firearm, 5.
Another 5. That kills him. Wait, 2, 4, 6, 8. Yeah, he's dead in the way.
He is down.
Unless he's soaked.
Down?
Unless he soaks. Physicality. This is all our first time in a new system.
That's right.
We're all on the same team. Soak is a DC 5, so he does not soak.
Hooray!
Yay, air high five.
Yeah.
All right, you've killed your first vampire. What's your blood status?
I have 2, down 3.
Are either of you in hungry?
No.
Okay. Then we'll deal with that other thought in a moment.
Oh, shit. Can we eat the ghouls?
They're human, so strictly speaking.
Mm. Is it tainted, though, because they've been feeding off others? I don't think it matters.
Go 1.
1 success.
1 success. No. Go ahead and make the opposed roll, please.
Oh, wait, is it melee?
Yes, it's melee. Yeah, no, it's just him. Make the opposed
roll. No, I'm trying to see how it works.
I have 1 success.
Okay.
So Ty, I take damage.
Ty, you take damage. And the damage is their physicality, which is 3. Roll to soak. Your physicality. Roll your physicality to 5.
Nope.
You do not soak. So you take the damage.
I take 3 damage?
You take 3 damage. Ghoul number 2. No successes. Mm. Ghoul number 3.
There's no opportunity attack.
There's not. Yeah. Simpler system. 2 successes.
2 successes. I'm about down, man.
All right. So, again, it's 3 damage. Make your soak roll.
Please soak. Please soak.
Round up, right? Soak 1.
No, you soak.
I soak. Yeah.
So that means half damage. Any success means you soak. That means half damage.
3 damage, round up to 2?
2.
I'm at crit because somebody pushed me off a building earlier.
You healed up. You spent a. I only did one.
I only healed one. Because I'm not smart before we get into combat. I know. This is on me.
There are three ghouls on your brother, mm-hmm. and your brother is seriously, seriously hurt. Mm. It's now back to your turn.
I'm going to run over and cap one of them, I guess.
Do that.
Mm. Oh, well. That's a crit. That's a 2 sixes.
All right, success. Mm-hmm. Damage is?
Five, yes.
Okay. On the ghouls. Mm-hmm. All right, and on a ghoul, mm-hmm. that's the ghoul. You just killed that ghoul. Two ghouls left. Your turn.
All right, so.
You're taking a whopping -3 die to everything you do?
No, I'm spending blood.
Okay.
I'm just going to go ahead and spend blood and get.
One.
Yeah. Okay,
it's one per turn, isn't it?
Spend one blood to restore one per turn. Or I can spend blood to raise my physicality for a scene. I think that's what I'm going to do.
Or you can do dodge. Right. And what dodge does is it gives you an additional 2 die to your physicality defense rolls. So you're -3 plus 2, so you're net only down 1 on physicality.
Mm. So could I... But a dodge is an action, right? So I couldn't combine that with my blood.
Yeah, you can't. You can't heal up and do that. You can just dodge.
All right.
It's up to you.
Well, I'm trying to think. If you healed one, that'd still have you a net. It's a net minus one. If you heal, it's a net minus two.
But then they hit me once and I'm done. Mm. Does the dodge matter if there's like 3 or 2 coming at me? Would I be able to dodge both or just one?
You have the same plus 2 to both attacks against you.
Okay, I'll do the dodge then.
Okay, so you go into dodge. So there's 2 ghouls now, and actually, one's going to attack you and one's going to attack you.
So,
this is on you.
Two
successes.
Yeah, I'm going to make this count or I'm dead.
You're net minus 1 on your physicality.
One success.
Okay, so he hits you for 3 damage. Roll the soak.
I soak.
You soak, so 2 damage.
So I'm still down.
Okay.
Oh yeah, I should probably. You're going to attack.
Oh yes, yeah. I was. Say that. With 2 successes. Make your physicality roll.
Mm-mm.
All right, 3 damage.
I'll get a soak.
Oh yeah, try to soak.
Yes.
Okay, 2 damage.
Well.
Make your move.
I shoot a gun.
Okay. Cast gun.
Ooh. Wait a minute. Oh, okay, I was blood to raise by whatchamahooze it for the fight.
But that's an action.
Oh, crap. I should have died before this. Oh, well.
Yeah, we'll know to go into a fight to do that next time.
I'm shooting with my gun.
Okay.
Haha, 3. They're close. Success.
All right, success. All right. Damage 4. Is 5.
4
now.
Yeah.
4 now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Because there's only one.
He's practically down. He's not dead, but he is seriously wounded.
Critical?
He is in critical, yeah.
Cool. All
right.
Oh, that's good, because then you can feed off him.
Well, no, that means he has -3 die on what he does. I'm
assuming. Oh, and he has, but you can never have less than 1 die.
Oh, well.
Okay.
Your turn?
I'm torped.
You're in torpor?
Yeah.
All right, so he is unconscious, that which means they're going to stop focusing on you, and the ghoul who has 1 die is going to attack you. 3, so nope.
Cool.
And the ghoul who's still totally healthy attacks you with 1 success.
Oh, we still have a health one? Damn it.
Yeah.
So make a physicality roll. Tie, so he hits. Roll to soak. All right, so you do not soak. And... You take 2 damage.
Damn.
Are you a torpor?
No, I'm a crit now. Well then.
It's basically you and him left. And it's your move.
You know, I tried the diplomacy. I shoot with a gun. Nope. It's a 3. Wait, no, 3 hits. 3 hits.
He's close range. He's close range. Yes. All right, you hit. That's 4 damage.
Mm-hmm.
All right, he's crit too. So the 2 crit guys.
Right,
miss from the first one. Oh. Miss from the second one.
Oh, boy.
All right, so where are you?
I'm a crit, not doing great.
So you're also at a minus three.
Yeah, so I have one die. Shoot him.
It all comes down to one roll.
Well, I mean two rolls, really, but I also have them. Oh! Look at that. There you go.
All right. You hit the... So that's one success.
Yep.
Plus three.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both a crit. So, yeah, you straight up take one of them out. The last one is going to try to flee. My main question to you is, are you going to let him?
I'm going to take a shot.
Take a shot.
I would say... If you could feed off of them, but take a shot.
I mean, well, that was a six until it rolled off. I guess I miss.
All right, he gets away, but you have killed a fledgling vampire and two of his three ghouls.
Listening to other actual play podcasts, I'm always surprised by the fluidity of combat, and it's never how it plays out for us at the table. Like, these guys are my friends. I know how these guys play. How much editing did you have to do on this?
That combat is probably a third as long as it was. I probably cut out two-thirds of page flipping, looking up the rules. People say you should never look up the rules at the table. I've certainly heard that sort of one-size-fits-all advice before. And we... as a group, have never subscribed to it.
I always look up rules.
Well, yeah. And I think that we do that. Number one, we play a lot of new systems.
That's kind of like our thing, really.
And when we play a new system, we spend the first like two or three sessions looking up rules. And then after that, we're pretty good.
Yeah. Like talking to other players, they're like, hey, what do you play? They'll be like, I play Pathfinder. I play this system. This is what I do. And I'm like, we play a little bit of everything. That's kind of how we roll.
We if I got you guys together for a game, your first question as you walked into my house would be,
what system are we playing?
Hey, what system are we playing?
Yeah. So how familiar were the guys with the system going into this? Did they bone up before, or are they really flying by the seat of their pants?
No, not at all. And I don't want any campaign I run to have a barrier to entry where they have to do homework.
We usually have a book in advance or something, and you would want us to read it or at least have some familiarity beforehand.
That's true. I used to be like that, but I'm over that now.
Okay.
Like homework, we said this in an early episode of RPGLL, and that's really what got me over it. Asking your players to do homework is just a little bit unreasonable. For our group, we have lives. You know, I'll take on the burden of teaching you as we go. Now, look, if this were a real serious actual play where we were trying to put out this consistent, mind-blowing story of a campaign that was meaningful and had amazing character arcs and did all this great stuff, then yeah, everyone should do their homework and come prepared. That way you perform. It's like being an actor. You learn your lines, you learn the stuff, you learn the rules of the world. You know, you show up prepared. This that we're doing for RPGLL, this vampire campaign, isn't meant to be this incredibly performative, mind-blowing story. It's more of a case study and a campaign. We'll play a little bit for you. You and I talk and analyze it. We play a little more. We talk and analyze it. We're really doing a campaign case study. And what I hope people get out of this is, if you have no idea how to approach stringing together several sessions into a campaign and having a relatively satisfying campaign arc, then hopefully this answers some of those questions.
That's been clear from the get-go, but I don't think it's been clearly articulated enough.
Nah, probably not.
So what I really think we need to do once this is done is it needs to be highlighted on the site as like, this is a series that we need to present to people, that if you it's like a guide almost. You know, every episode in a way is a guide, but this is a series on how to do a campaign in Masquerade. I think when we first talked about it, the idea was how to do an actual play. But it's less of how to do an actual play. At least we talked about that before.
We had, yes.
Yeah, I guess that's how I approach this. But no, it's really how to put together a campaign. It makes sense. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I'm not performative enough, and I'm not enough of a writer to be an authority on how to put together a good actual play. Like, that's not our sweet spot.
You're a pretty great writer.
I appreciate that, but I'm a pretty good technical writer. I'm not a great fiction writer. Yeah, I've got one piece of fiction published ever. As a short story form on a website, you know, 20 years ago. Not something, it was a paid publication, but it was a website. But not a great fiction writer, and I don't really aspire to be as much anymore. I just want to help people run fun campaigns that are narrative enough and have enough of an arc to be satisfying at your table, not necessarily for the entire world to listen to.
Okay. I mean, I guess sort of getting back to the the combat system. I mean, I had a question, I guess, about combat, but I guess I'm really more interested in, like, what do you think of the combat in the system in general?
Boy, I think the system struggles with combat. I don't think combat is the point of the system. I mean, so many of the powers are not combat powers. You know, dominate, presence, obfuscate. They've got some combat utility. You can use, you know, dominate as sort of an impromptu hold person, to use a D&D analogy.
Is it grapple?
No.
It's not grapple.
No. There is a grab. There are grab mechanics. There is grapple. Certainly there are combat mechanics, and there's enough there that, you know, you can have a satisfying combat, but combat is over pretty quick usually. And initiative, there's no rolling for initiative. Initiative, just you do these set comparisons and these set orders, and if this vampire has advanced celerity, he will always win initiative. Ah, but if this other vampire has, you know, hunters, whatever, they will always win initiative. Like initiative's pretty set, which in a vampire world makes sense, right? If you're a vampire and super speed is your power, no one's going to win initiative on you unless they get some kind of crazy surprise round, which the GM, the storyteller, could always rule.
Yeah.
So it's weird in that things that are usually rolled for are static. It's also weird. It's weird to me because ranged combat and melee combat are so different. In D&D or any D20 game, you roll a D20 to attack, you add whatever modifiers, and you compare it to either armor class or some other static defense. In Vampire the Masquerade, it's much more like Savage Worlds. There is a way to roll ranged combat where you roll against a static difficulty and you succeed or you fail. Versus melee combat, you do an opposed roll. You roll and the target rolls, and the highest roll, you know, wins. So it's just a different... It's melee combat and ranged combat are just have different mechanics entirely. A broader opinion on combat in this system. One thing that we really learned throughout this campaign is the side that prepares wins, period. The side that uses blood and buffs their physicality, the side that activates their powers, which takes an action, before the combat, that side wins. So the side that prepares and hits first wins. This combat was really hard because Nathan and Chris didn't pause before the combat to spend their blood buffing physicality. They didn't do any of that preparation. They just sort of went in and started shooting. Thank goodness they got that surprise attack in and were able to attack first. Otherwise, they definitely would have lost. But combat is very predetermined based on who's the most prepared, which perhaps is realistic. I wouldn't know. I've never been in the armed forces.
But you've been in a fight.
Yes, and that was much more emotional, sort of, you know, your typical high school, like emotions run over and shoving and pushing and all that. But in true, like, Mortal Kombat, where someone's going to die and, you know, weapons are involved and people are prepared, that kind of thing, in this system, the side that prepares and initiates usually prevails.
So this is this campaign. It's in the books. We're listening to something that's already played out, and I don't want to spoil anything.
Sure.
But, like, playing with these guys in the past, you know, and I think especially Chris playing his usual rogue. I mean, he gets really into the nitty gritty of how he to exploit everything that his character can do. And it's just his characters are they tend to be very efficient, you know, in combat. Did the guys ever really get into the groove of how the system works as far as combat goes?
They did. As far as combat goes, yes. And there's another groove they got into that we can definitely talk about next episode when we get into the wonderful world of Diablerie. And I'll drop that word on you, Diablerie. This Diablerie starts to play a pretty important role in this campaign moving forward, starting with the next episode. And Chris really unleashes his you know, inner min-maxer or his inner optimizer once that starts.
Cool. Well, I can't wait to listen.
Awesome. Thank you for listening. People call them postmortems, evaluations, appraisals, reviews, retrospectives. We call them lessons learned, and we're sharing ours with you.